I've been asked to start with a prayer, and I was sent a copy of the Responsibility of the Pledge, which makes me think that somehow I got the words wrong the first time we did this morning.
You missed the part. You got it all right.
I missed the part. So let's say it right, and let's Responsibility of the Pledge. Always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsions. For this, I am responsible. Thank you. I appreciate. I did know it off by heart, but occasionally you forget it. I forgot to tell you the one joke, the premiere of the joke. You know, this is. It comes in at the rationales, sort of why we go back to drinking, the mental obsession discussion. And this joke is usually told with an Irish accent that I can't do, and I'm going to tell it more generically. Let's see whether you like it. I don't know. You may not. You may not. I'm testing it here. You're the pilot project. A man walks into a bar, and he orders 3 draft beers from the bartender. Bartender gives it to him. He goes off. He goes to a table, and he puts... one beer in front of 2 other chairs and sits down and puts the third beer in front of him. He then proceeds to drink a sip out of one beer, and then he goes to the other beer, drinks a sip out of that, goes to the other beer, drinks a sip out of that, until he goes around, and he's sort of in alternating, he's drinking out of each beer. Bartender goes up to him and says, "It goes bad. You shouldn't do this. I'll be happy to bring you other beers, but I can't stand to see beer go stale while you're sort of drinking light. You want 3 beers? I'll get you 3 beers in order." "Oh, you don't understand," says this man. "My brothers and I live, I have 2 other brothers, we live very far away from each other in different parts of the globe. And today is the anniversary of our parents' marriage. They both passed away. We love them very much. So we've agreed that every time this date, each of us will go to a bar and we'll each have 3 beers to represent the other things." "Well, that's very touching," says the bartender. "You know, and that's very nice." And this man, and he says, "I'm new here. I'm new in this town, but this is my first time." The years go on, and the guy will occasionally come to the bar and just sit around and have a drink. But on this particular date, the bartender knows he comes and he orders the 3 beers and he sits there in a kind of a ceremonial way. It goes on for a number of years. One year, the man comes in and orders 2 beers. Bartender says, "Oh my God, did one of your brothers die?" "No," he says, "I've quit drinking." It's not bad, huh?
That's a keeper.
It's a winner.
It's a winner. I can keep it, eh? Okay. I've been asked a lot of questions. Most of them come into step 12, so I will deal with them. Some come into step 10. I was asked, "What do you surrender your will to?" Well, I want to make clear that step 3 is a decision to surrender your will, but the surrendering of the will comes in steps 4 through 9. And the answer to that this question is, I don't know. It will turn out to be your deepest values, whatever they are. I was talking to someone, I guess, over lunch, and what are my deepest values, or what if I don't believe in love? Someone's asked me that question. Why I don't believe in love? I'm not saying that the deepest values you start with will end up being necessarily the deepest value you end up with. Lots of people have gone into this program and have chosen sort of the group as a higher power that they dedicate to, and end up going back to the religion of their childhood in a deep and loving way. Others have started with the religion of their childhood and have ended up with another concept of a deity by the time they reach step 9. So you just have to start knowing or believing from the experience of others that by the time you finish step 9, you will be in a different spiritual realm where your relationship with whatever you really do deeply believe in the pipeline is open.
The question was more about you as an agnostic. What do you as an agnostic surrender to?
I surrender to truth, love, justice, and beauty.
Yep.
Whenever I need to know what is my direction in life, I say, how close am I in going in the direction of truth, love, justice, and beauty? I once sponsored a rabbi, and he said to me when we were talking about higher power, he said, "You know, the God of the Old Testament is not a very loving, wonderful God, a very vengeful and almost egotistical God. You know, it's very hard for me to imagine that God as being the God that will help me. And I'm trying to figure out what I should do about this. And he came back a week later, and he said, "I've decided that my God will be the God of the Book of Jonah." I said, "What?" It says, "In the Book of Jonah, God continues to play practical jokes on Jonah until he finally does the right thing." And he explained, it's actually interesting, in the original, in the Hebrew or Aramaic or whatever language it was in, the final sentence is hilarious, if you like jokes like that. I don't know, it's not worth going into, but the Hebrew I read is very simplistic, but he says that the... and he explained why it was so funny and why it's all written in a sort of a light vein, even though the way we might read it in the English translation is not as light. So that's what he said his higher power would be, the God of humor, the God of compassion, the God I only give that to you. Some people grow up with a very scary God. Their childhood is full of scary gods. They have more problems, I think, than the atheist or the agnostic does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And because they have this sense of guilt, they have the sense of I'm already doomed, you know, and all that. I've never had that, but other people grow up with that. And all I can say to you is have some faith based on the experience of millions of people with dozens and hundreds of addictions, that if you work the steps, by the time you finish step 9, the big book promises, and it's come true, that you will have a deep and valuable connection with your deepest beliefs, and that you can maintain that in steps 10, 11, and 12. And you don't have to go beyond that. It's willingness and not actuality. So it's a wonderful question, and that's my... okay answer. I told the story, and then, okay, fine. Now we're into step 4. And I want to talk about that in both the general and the specific sense. The book that you've been given, which you can download for free at oabigbook.info, at that website you can also download the forms that were developed by this AA guy who taught me so much, Blaine, that are virtually straight from the big book. Those of you who are familiar with Joe and Charlie will know that Joe and Charlie incorporate other stuff, and they actually say this isn't just straight from the big book. I find the big book approach to be utterly amazing, and I venture to think that Bill didn't know how amazing it was when he created it. Because I'm going to explain to you things that I keep discovering in it. But I want to start with, I read it as we finished this afternoon, bottom page 63. Next, after the step 3 prayer, which is only a decision, we launched out on a course of personal, of vigorous action. And Blaine points out that launching means to propel yourself with force away from a safe haven, a port. We launched a dock. We launched out on the course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision, step 3, always step 3. Whenever you see the word decision, from now on, it will always be step 3. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort. Now, please note these words, to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Blocking us from what? The sunlight of the Spirit, we'll find out later. Our higher power. What are the things that are blocking us? We'll find out that they are character defects. Our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. So step 4 is starting on a personal inventory. And the object of the personal inventory is to face and then to be rid of the things which were blocking us. And I want to suggest to you, not so humbly, that that means steps 4 through 9, that the inventory, even though it's only in step 4 that the word inventory is mentioned until we get to step 10, the process described by the big book is steps 4 through 9 as the way of facing and to be rid of the things which are blocking us from the sunlight of the Spirit. And I think you'll see that as we go along, but I only point, this is the first element of my proof. We started upon a personal inventory, this was step 4. Then they go into the example of a business which takes no regular inventory, usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact finding, searching, and fact facing, fearless. When you face facts, it's fearless. When you search, when you fact find, you're searching. And so that's, again, searching and fearless. Excuse me. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. So a commercial inventory is done for all kinds of reasons. You look at how you're doing generally, what you have in stock, what you don't have in stock, what's selling, what's not selling, the good stuff, the bad stuff, whatever. That's what a commercial inventory is. Then they say it is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object, so one of the purposes of a commercial inventory is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly without regret. So one of the purposes of a commercial inventory is to get rid of the stuff that should be gotten rid of. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Now, the big book is really good with firsts and not that good with seconds and nexts. There is no next after this. But it will be step 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So the first thing we do is to search out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested coming out in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestation, its common appearances. How are we convinced that self was what had defeated us? By the discussion of wanting to be the director instead of the actor. This need to be in charge that has led to the disasters of our lives. And that's what convinced us. Let me go overview and then zero in on the specifics. I have time to deal with it. But, I mean, I could do it a lot more in detail than I do with my sponsees, but I'll give you the overview. The big book asks us to analyze our resentments, our fears, and our sex conduct. As you will see from the forms, which are in this book and which you can download for free, not the book, but also the forms, on the same website, oabigbook.info, we start off with resentments, and we will find that the resentments disclose to us 4 character defects, big, broad character defects. And that is selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. You don't have, I mean, you can take notes if you want, but this is both in the book that you've received and also in the big book. More important, it's in the big book. Each one of those has to be parsed. We have to understand what they mean. But at any rate, we end up with 4 huge character defects, way beyond the 20 list of 25 or 30 that you will often get in books. By the way, I'm about to tell you the only original joke in my whole repertoire. I made this up. And because of the revision to the 08, 12, and 12, I had to modify it. You know the series of jokes about screwing in a light bulb? How many X's does it take to screw in a light bulb? How many psychiatrists or psychologists does it take to screw in a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to want to change. You know, how many chiropractors does it take to screw in a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to keep coming back for adjustments. How many stupid people does it take to, I mean, this is always told in a racist way, I don't tell it that way, but how many stupid people does it take to screw in a light bulb? 5. One to hold the light bulb and the other to move the ladder around. It's often told, and it's a denigrating method because people talk about sort of stereotypes and stuff, blondes or in Canada, Newfies, people from Newfoundland and stuff. One of my favorites has been one within the feminist movement. How many feminists does it take to screw in a light bulb? That's not funny. Yeah, how many, what's the answer to the lawyer one?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure there is a lawyer joke. How many Jewish mothers does it take to screw in a light bulb? That's okay, I'll sit in the dark. So, I mean, there are all these things. So how many OAers does it take to screw in a light bulb? The answer is, listen, I've answered 165 questions. I'm not answering anymore. There are many different ways of doing an inventory. So there are 165 questions in the OA 12 and 12. I counted them just recently. And you know what? They're good questions. They're a lot better than the original one. The one in the second edition is better. It's better organized, and the questions are more to the point. We no longer have the "Have you ever had sex with animals?" that was in the first one. But they're still pretty broad. You know, have you ever felt jealous of people? You know, disgust. And you can imagine the weeks that I could, you know, devote to that. And then there are inventories where you're given a list of 25 character defects. Well, like Dr. Bob did, you know, you've done this, disgust, you know, and all that. I'm not going to say anything against any of these methods. I am going to say that for me, the criterion, and it's the sole criterion, no. There are a few criteria that I would use to judge, for me, a method of inventory. One is it fast? Is it, generally speaking, fast? Second is, does it give you insights? And the third, because the big book does this, does it give you a sense of what life would be like without your character defects? And the big book does that. And so on those three scores, the big book does very, very well. And it's well worth looking at, because there's a brilliance to the big book which is truly amazing. I haven't said yet, but I will say this. When I get to sponsor people, I take them through, you know, their plan of eating, and we talk about developing a plan of eating that will make them abstinent. I also do two other things. I work on a strategy and a timeline for working the steps so that they have a sense of when it ends, like when they're going to finish step 9, because I think it's really horrible and hard to say I'll never be able to have this again and not to have a sense of how long you have to hold on for, you know. And the other one is I work with them on a day-to-day strategy. What are you going to do to avoid temptation today? What are the kinds of temptations you face? What are you going to do if you face them? And we work that out. But one of the things I say to them is that the moment you abstain, you're in a race with your mind. Your mind is going to want to send you back to the food. It's going to try everything it can to get you back to what you've given up. And you've got to finish step 9 or get halfway through step 9 to make sure that your mind is overcome. So you're racing with your mind. And so the faster you can do a good job of an inventory, the better. Okay? You're in the race. I mean, it is a race. If you're convinced that your problem is that you can't stop once you've started and that you cannot stop from starting, and you're convinced that your mind will find any way possible to send you back, then you're in a race. You've given up eating. You're working the steps. You believe, based on the experience of other people, that it's possible that once you finish step 9, you won't want to go back to what you've given up. But before you reach that point of safety and neutrality, you've got a space of time where the mind's going to try and get you back. You're going to be faced with all kinds of temptation. And the faster you can work the steps in a good, honest way, and a deep way, the better. So from that perspective, I'm sorry, this is an anesthetic cough lozenge and I'm losing all feeling in my mouth. So you start with your resentments. I want to talk about what a resentment is. But once you work through this sheet, and you end up with four character defects: selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. In the fear form, you deal with your fears, the frightened part. And you end up, as a result of that form, with getting, well, the big book promises you outgrow fears. You outgrow your fears. You end up getting a sense of a strategy of life to deal with the things that you have been afraid of. And you outgrow your fears. You become an adult, really. That part is unbelievable. And then you have what they call the sex conduct form. I'll talk about what sex conduct is. in which you deal with difficult relationships and subject them to the test, where was I selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? And we'll see that inconsiderate and self-seeking are two sides of the same coin. So not only are you dealing with your fears, you remember you have four character defects, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. One of them is dealt with in the fear form. The other three are dealt with in the sex conduct form, where you end up learning from the mistakes of the past the way to live in an unselfish, honest, and considerate way, non-self-seeking. So in the space of what I will show you, I think takes no more than 2-3 weeks, and at the most 6, you've done your step 4. And you've not only isolated your 4 major character defects, but you've also seen a world in which you don't have them. And you want that world. So when it comes then to step 5, you're using step 5 as kind of like a feedback mechanism to sort of see, are you too hard on yourself? Are you too light, easy on yourself? You're finding out, I'll talk about this more when we get there, that no one's unique and that every, you know, people you talk to have the same issues that you have, especially if you have only 4 character defects. We're all selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Okay. And then in 6 and 7, towards the end of 5, there will be a checklist to see whether you've been honest enough. You'll be asked 4 questions. It's in the big book. And if those 4 questions are all answered yes, you finish step 4, you finish step 5. The answer is no, you've got a little bit more to do, just a little bit of jiggering here and there. And then you go on to 6 and 7. 6 and 7 are blasts. Of course you're ready to get rid of your selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and fear, because A, you realize how that screwed up your entire life, and B, you can see the kind of life you can live without them. So your 6 and 7 are easy. And then 8 and 9, you're starting your amends. So the process is really fast once you finish your step 4. The big book, there's a debate among us big book thumpers as to exactly how long you should spend doing 6 and 7, but there's a consensus that it's pretty fast. I say the same day or maybe the next morning after step 5, and you know, Harlan and Ruth will say 2 or 3 days of more deep meditation. Fine, I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. But whatever it is, you whiz right through 6 and 7. And then you're on to 8 and 9, and you are ready to make amends because you know exactly the harm that you did to others, which allows you to figure out what kind of amends you have to make. Sometimes the harm you did to others was not telling the truth when the truth should be told about the horrible things that they did, or saying it to them about the things that they're doing. For OA, the big book doesn't discuss this, but for OA, one of the key problems of honesty is not going to be lying, cheating, or stealing. Sure, we've done that. But it's going to be not telling the truth when the truth should be told. We are people pleasers. We are people who have been pushed around so much because of, for all kinds of reasons. And often, sort of standing up is what's important. Not for your sake, but for their sake. And we'll talk about that. It's always outer-directed, not inner-directed, and your amends will become clear to you as to what should be done. And they will differ among you. So, let's first of all talk about resentment. And you'll see the form on page 27. For some reason, it's not very well reproduced here. The form is available on oabigbook.info, and it is... you can actually fill it out on the computer. I'm not very happy with it. The person who put it together became an expert on Adobe Acrobat and then lost his knowledge of it and has to sort of redo it. It's a very hard form to do in Excel. No one has ever done it well that I've seen. You'd think it should be able to be done in Excel, but you can't. But I've never found anyone who can do it. And but you can fill this out on your computer, but you have to save every page separately. Okay. So let's read the big book, and then we'll sort of look at it in the form. Resentment, page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we've been not only mentally and physically sick, we've been physically ill. We've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten up mentally and physically. Okay? What is a resentment? Now, resentment in normal language means things that you're angry about, things that you really are angry about. And the big book actually uses the word anger in one or two places to describe a resentment. As I told you, I prided myself on never being angry. I was pitying, self-pitying and pitying others. I was tolerant. I was compassionate. I was sad when people did horrible things. They saddened me. But anger was not a word that I would have used to describe all the things that were running around rent-free in my mind. And I can only encourage you. I can't quite prove it through the big book, although if you really push me, I could sort of prove it. But I encourage you to think of a resentment as whatever bothers you about the past and the present that's not going your way or that didn't go your way. Anything, whether you're angry or whether you're sad, however you feel about it, anything that's still in your mind right now that bothers you and that you think about, maybe not all the time, but you do think about a lot, is a resentment. It is the past didn't go my way and the present isn't going my way. It is the what ifs and the if onlys of your life. You know, my life would be completely different if only this hadn't happened, or if only I had done this, or what if this had happened? What if I had ended up, marrying so-and-so, or what if I, and you live in this life of fantasy or horror, depending on how you feel, right? No, really. But it's all the things that you think about, okay? And the big book says, we set them on paper, and the first column is we listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. I appreciate the use of the word angry. I really do recommend that you broaden that. It's not just anger. It's anything that you resent, anything that you wish weren't true. So people, who might you list? Well, I listed my first one. I listed a person who insulted my father. I listed an ex-girlfriend. I listed a close relative. I listed my wife and my father and my mother and my kids. I listed people in politics. I listed people all kinds of people. I mean, both in public and my own life, people who I thought were doing wrong. Hitler was on my list. And I just listed them. I just made a list. And you'll see on the form, there's on page 27, there are small boxes on the first column, and there are big boxes. The big boxes are blank space. Someday we'll have to change the form and make sure that it's clear that the big boxes are blank. It's the small boxes where you write the name of the person. Okay? So that's people. The second thing you write down are institutions. Well, what are institutions? A group of people whom you don't know by name. So I wrote down at one point somewhere in my step four, three particular talk show hosts, and I also wrote down talk show hosts in general. Okay? Just as an example, as a lawyer, I was dealing with a particular university who I thought had really missed, at one point, I thought it really harmed my client. For me, it was just a mission to get that client some redress. So I listed the individual, I don't remember, a dean or a clerk or so, I don't know who it was, the person, but I also listed the university as a whole because its method of dealing with complaints was inadequate and I was being met with brick walls everywhere I went. So that's just an example of the difference between institution and a, I listed the justice system because, in all my career as a lawyer, I never really saw a lot of justice, at least from my perspective, what justice means. Friends of mine, and I'm going to start using their experience as well, and they've given me permission to do this, but they have written down the man who raped me when I was 8 years old. The person who committed incest, the uncle who committed incest on me. The horrible, horrible things that happen have happened in people's lives. the person who raped me when I was 16. I mean, these horrible, horrible things. And they wrote those people down. They may not know them by name, you know, but they would write them down. And you just write them down, okay? You also write down what seem to be silly things, like the person who parked in my parking spot, the person who parked on two line, over the line, you know. I mean, even the little things that annoy you, people who don't know how to spell whose or yours, you know. That might not be interesting to some of you, but, you know, as an English graduate, it's hard. Hard to, anyway. I mean, they might bother you. People who pontificate without knowing what the hell they're talking about. I mean, you know, I mean, that's a group of people. If you're on Facebook, you've met them. And you may be one of them for all you know, you know. So you know what I'm talking about. So you write down the deeply, deeply difficult things in your life, as well as the little things, because sometimes the little things are also bothering you in a sense that they're all in your mind. And that's one column. So you might need 20, 30, 40 copies of this first sheet on resentments in order to write in the first column. Little piece of advice, if you know that one of the people you've put in is going to require a lot of discussion in the second column, only put them on the top and leave the other two boxes blank. For instance, I knew when I first did my first step four, my wife would take up a lot of room in the second column, so I just put my wife up in the first box, but I didn't put anything more. My mother the same, my father maybe not so much. At a certain point, especially when my older daughter was between the ages of 12 to 15, she needed a whole page for herself. I'll just tell this one thing. At her wedding, to this wonderful man, my son-in-law, I told her before the wedding, I'm going to tell these two stories about you, which are hilarious, which I cannot tell you. And she gave me a look that would turn anyone into stone. The look that scared the hell out of me. And so the speech I ended up giving was to tell that and say, I can't tell you the stories. But let me tell you, that turned me into stone. But what I can say about our son-in-law, our prospective son-in-law, the great thing about him is that when Katie, my daughter, gives him that look, he says, Katie, use your words. Use your words. Actually, when they told us that they were getting married, I tapped our prospective son-in-law on the shoulder. I said, you're it. I love my daughter beyond compare, and she always was a really fine person, but those 12 to 15 years was just traumatic. So anyway, she occupied a whole page at one point. She occupies no pages now. But what is a principle? The big book doesn't tell you what a principle is. And I'm going to give you a suggestion, which I think is true. I think a principle is a presumed fact that you can't accept, that you wish were not true. And that could be as simple as, I'll never get this program. I will never lose weight. I am afraid of a relationship. Things like that. Things about yourself. Don't put yourself down, but put the things about yourself that bother you. And things that can be as broad as, there is suffering in this, innocent people are suffering in this world, which is pretty broad, but is something that has occupied a lot of my mind at times. It can be life will never change for the vast majority of people. It can be people will never understand how good things are. I don't know what it is. It's your thinking and not mine. It's not necessarily things that you think should be on there. It's things that bother you today, or, you know, within the week that you're working on this. So, for instance, I had a sponsee who, you know, we talked about the forum. She said, listen, 20 years ago, I was raped, and it was terrible. I've been through 10 years of therapy. It means nothing to me now. I've dealt with it. I don't think about it. It hasn't changed my life, or my life is back to normal. Should I put that down? My answer is twofold whenever I'm asked that. Is I said, if it's not on your mind now, my general recommendation is not to put it down. And By the time you finish step five, you'll have those four questions which will tell you whether you should have put it down. Okay? So it turned out that she answered the four questions fine and she never had to put it down because it wasn't on her mind. So it's not a moment of deep analysis for you. You're really trying to empty your mind onto paper. All the things that bother you are going onto paper. And it's fascinating what happens when you do that. First of all, some of the things will, oh, that's on my mind? You know, you sort of say, this is bothering me? You know, and you might even give them up at that moment. Others, you will just sort of see, you'll see this list and you realize, boy, am I holding a lot in my mind. Are things really, really bothering me? You know, if you do it one evening or one day and then go to sleep, try to sleep, and you may not be able to, but you try to sleep, and then the next morning, more will come. Because it's like the onion, you're scratching the surface. There are a lot of things that are plugging you up, and maybe once you get rid of some of them, you'll find others. You might end up with 60, 70 pages of things. You might end up with 20. I don't know. But whatever it is, it's not going to take you long to write down a lot of names and a lot of principles. You know, it can take you 3 hours, 4 hours total, maybe over 2 days, but not a lot because it's just going straight from your mind onto paper. It's not as if you're doing a deep analysis of your entire life history. You're not going from womb, from the how it felt to be expelled from the womb to today. You're not, you know, a lot of people recommend that, you know, tell your life story and stuff. But this is much more practical. You're just putting onto paper what's in your mind. That's the first column. That's not hard to do, and there's no great thinking involved in that. You're just putting it down. The big book then says, we asked ourselves why we were angry. And again, the use of the word anger, I really recommend, especially for OAers who are in the people-pleasing business and all that, not just to use the word angry, but to use the words on my mind, or I wish they weren't on my mind, or something like that. So the big book gives an example on page 65 of what it would be to ask ourselves why we were angry. Well, no, let me finish reading this, then we'll go to that next page. Then it says, in most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. So that's the other example of why we were angry. Why is this person, this institution, or this principle on my list? And that's the second column. You see on page 65, I'm resentful at. They give the example of four people, Brown, Jones, employer, and wife. And then the cause, and that's the second column, the cause, okay? And it's been pointed out that the most number of words that's used is 19 in one of those points. I haven't counted, but I'm sure that's true. And one of the big book workshop people I've heard in AA said, I give my sponsees the luxury of 20 words, no more than 20. My recommendation, if you follow this, it is not to tell the story, but to put down, encapsulate the cause. So for instance, Mr. Brown, his attention to my wife, you can imagine the lengthy story that could be written, all the times that he paid attention to my wife. There was the party, there was the office, you know what I'm saying? It's not, you don't need any of that. Told my wife of my mistress. That's separate from his attention to my wife. And Brown may get my job at the office. I mean, each one of these is at least a short story, if not a novel, right? But you don't have to put it down because you know you will be showing that to no one else. Okay? I'll give you an example with an ex-girlfriend. There was a 24-hour period in which all kinds of things happened that I thought about, even after getting married, even after knowing that that had been a stupid, doomed relationship, and that I was totally and still am totally in love with my wife. For years, I still thought of that one day in which so many things happened. I'm not going to tell you what happened, but so many things happened. And there was always that, oh, I should have said that, or, you know, I could have done this, or, you know, all this stupid stuff, really stupid. I just put down that day because I knew what I was talking about. It's only two words. But there were other things I would have put down. For Hitler. Now, I told you yesterday, for many years, I was obsessed with the Holocaust. I was obsessed with how in the most liberal and civil rights-minded nation in the world in the 1920s, the dictatorial, horrible things could be done to people. How did that happen? I studied the Third Reich, and I studied the Weimar Republic. I mean, huge. And I studied the Holocaust as well. I had a huge library. It was way up in the bookshelf. I had no idea. My 12-year-old daughter read everything in my library. I had no idea she read all those books, which, of course, was, oh, God. I apologized to her for having, I thought she'd never get up there, but she did. And, of course, that, anyway, what did I put down for Hitler? I don't remember exactly, but I think there were only about three things. Responsible for the deaths of millions of people. Got away with it. And it can happen again. And that's only three things. But boy, each one of them represents, you know, years of my sort of analyzing and trying to understand things. So, you know, for the, you know, the spouse. Do I have examples? On the website, oabigbook.org, you can actually download a file in which I give examples of sort of, they're very generic examples, but they're examples of things that people might put down.
Dot info, right?
OABigBook.info. Information, I-N-F-O, about the big book in OA. You go through one web page, one page where it says, if you want Overeaters Anonymous, here, go there. This is not affiliated with Overeaters Anonymous. Click here if you're interested in the big book. And then you get to all one page where there are all kinds of little blue things that you can click on that will get you a number of different resources, including someone asked me, are there podcasts of my talking? Well, you'll be able to get one of this one, but there are three links to podcasts of things I've done for what they're worth. So for an imaginary spouse, not my wife, who is a saint, but an imaginary spouse, spends too much money. Doesn't give me enough love. Wants too much sex. Wants too little sex. Well, wants too little sex, you know. Doesn't listen to me. Doesn't wash the dishes. Doesn't clean up after the meal. You know, doesn't do what he or she should be doing. I mean, little things like cleaning up and big things like sex or like money or whatever, or lack of love. I'm afraid we'll divorce. You know? I mean, these are deep things, and some of them are silly things, but whatever they are, they'll probably be hand in hand with each other. So you put them down in point form, bang, 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 bang. And it's a fascinating experience to put that down. Because first of all, you write down what bothers me, and then you're separating the people from the actions. You're saying it's not the people who are bothering me, it's what they're doing, or it's why they're on that second column. For institutions, you know, justice system doesn't give justice, you know, oppresses people who are disadvantaged, whatever. For principles, I'll never get thin. I want to be attractive. I'm so lonely and I want to find someone to love me. I don't have any faith that I will ever get out of this despair I'm in. Well, each one of those is a pretty big topic, but there it is in point form. There will always be people suffering in this world, innocent people suffering in this world. I can't do anything about it. It is horrible what's going on. I feel for them, but I don't do enough to do whatever I could be doing. Okay? You know what I'm saying? Like, what I wrote down for myself might not be what you would write down, but you're writing it down. Again, it's coming from your head very quickly onto the paper. You're not doing a whole bunch of self-analysis. Why are they on my mind? Okay? That makes sense? Okay. Then the big book says, in most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relations, including sex, were hurt or threatened. And then they also say the next paragraph, was it our self-esteem, our security? Now, you notice it's security and not pocketbooks. Pocketbooks in 1939 meant money issues. Pocketbook was like a wallet. And so originally it started off as pocketbooks as being our financial security, but then they enlarge it to mean any kind of security. Our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which have been interfered with. And then you'll see on page 65 the examples they give. And each point So his attention to my wife, next to Mr. Brown, affects both sex relations and self-esteem, and fear is involved. Okay? Told my wife of my mistress affects self-relations and sex relations and self-esteem. Brown may get my job at the office affects my security and my self-esteem. Okay? So the form here gives you, and it's very badly reproduced in this book, gives you sub-columns of self-esteem, security, pocketbooks, ambitions, personal relations, sex relations, and is any fear involved. Okay? And if you fill this out on the computer, it actually, you press the return and you get a check mark. Okay? So each one of the points that you've listed in column two is then subjected to the question, has this affected my self-esteem? Go down the column. Has this affected my security, my sense of safety, including money issues? Go down the column. Check, check, no check, no check, 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 no check. I mean, right? It's just so you're just doing it. It's really mechanical at this point. And there are no right answers, and there's lots of overlap. You know, Hitler, responsible for the death of millions of people, doesn't affect my security. It could happen again. Oh, yes, it affects my security, right? Responsible for the death of millions of people affects my self-esteem? No. Unless, and this has happened to me way in the past, doesn't happen to me now, I did not stop someone from being racist. I did not call that person out. Then I feel bad about myself that it happened and I did nothing to stop it. You know? So it just depends on my circumstances as to how I might feel. Depends on how I feel from one day to the other. But whatever it is, you go down each subcolumn and you ask that. So what is self-esteem? How I feel about myself. What is security? It is a general feeling of safety. So do you feel unsafe, both in general and in particular with respect to money issues? Ambitions, it's what I want out of life. It's as simple as that. Responsible for the death of millions of people, it affects my ambitions. Almost everything will affect my ambitions if it's a resentment, because a resentment is something I wish weren't true, right? Something that's in my mind. So almost always you'll be putting check marks beside ambitions. Personal relations, it depends on whether something will affect my personal relations. Obviously, my relations with my wife will affect my personal relations, right? Because I relate to her. But my relations with Hitler may not, if you know what I mean. Sex relations, separate from personal relations. And is any fear involved? So it's a matter of check, check, no check, no check, no check, 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 no check, no check, 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 all the way down. And it is, I know there are people who have done it. Do you agree with me? It's relatively, it's not mechanical, but it's fast, right? Very fast. Yeah, so there are lots of people, all of you in the front row, well, that tells us. No, I'm kidding. You know, it really makes a difference. And it's fascinating because not only have you separated the people from the actions in the second column, you're also separating the actions from how I choose to react to those actions and the effect of that. And so you're gradually moving from what bothers you, that you can give a name to or a title to realizing it's how you react to why they're there that's really your problem. It also shows you that you have a lot of checklists. You have a lot of checks. A lot of checks. That as a matter of fact, when you think about it, how in the world can you be sane about food when you are being challenged by so many things that affect how you feel about yourself, how safe you feel, what you want out of life, and that your personal and sexual relations are completely screwed up, and that you're full of fear. How could you remember not to eat the ice cream when you think about it? I'm not kidding you. I mean, it's funny in a sense, but it's true. You're sort of, you look at all these checklists and you say, no wonder I'm really, my mind is so filled with stuff that I can never remember. And that's a real bombshell. Now, page 65 at the bottom of the book says, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent, page 66, was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. And sure, to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes, however, it was remorse. And then we were sore at ourselves. And there's an indication that you write down resentments about things, people you may have harmed. I didn't mention that before, but you may think about people you've harmed, and they may be on your mind a lot. You would write them down too. And you're not angry at the people you've harmed, but you're still writing them down. So the remorse that you feel is part of my proof that anger isn't the only criterion for what you put down in the first column. I hope that doesn't get too esoteric on you guys. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worst matters got. The worst matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. I don't know about you, but I have experienced times in my life, not recently, not for the last many years, where I could not be in the same room with someone who didn't know me. There was this guy, he was a politician. My dad was I would call him a statesman rather than a politician, but he insulted my dad terribly. He didn't know me. I was in a restaurant one day. He comes in. And I wanted to go up to him and say, for those of you who know this, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father, prepared to die, you know, from the Princess Bride. But I didn't. I left the restaurant in the middle of my meal, which is quite unusual because I wasn't in OA at the time. I couldn't be in the same room with him. I wanted to kill him, and he didn't even know who I was. And there were other people I couldn't be in the same room. And it's fascinating because I have a friend who, a very close friend, who used to work in a place where I knew all of the people who worked. And they were very good friends of mine, all of them. And there was this one person who had been recently hired, who was a big, tall person who maybe didn't even realize how intimidating he was. He would get a lot tall. Many tall people have a habit of getting close to you, you know, and looking up like that. I have a few friends like that. But he was also sort of very certain of himself, and he really, this friend of mine would say that, you know, at me staffing and stuff, he would just intimidate the other people. And I was angry that my friends were being intimidated. And I'd be invited to parties of these people. And I couldn't talk to this person. I was not in that room. I just wanted to, you know, what are you doing to my friends? You know who did talk to him? My friend. Because once my friend had talked about it, it was gone. And that's just an example of how I would hold on to things, whereas most people were able to sort of say, okay, it's done. But I couldn't. It's the Just for Today OA book. Ordinary people, when faced with a flat tire, will call the motor leaguer, you know, the roadside.
AAA.
Pardon me?
AAA.
OAers will call the suicide line. You know? And so we often have these fits of panic when it would be reasonable. So they point out, our moments of triumph were short-lived. It's taking poison and hoping the other person will die. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander, waste the hours that might have been worthwhile? That's true for everyone. But with the alcoholic, with the addict, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, the manuscript used to say, whose only hope? And they took that out, and I know why they took that out, to be sure that they weren't saying this is the only method to salvation, but whose hope, that's my hope, is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. This business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. That's the pipeline. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we have to be free of anger. Now, free of anger doesn't mean we won't feel anger, but it means we will be free of it. It will go. It will pass. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the woman who wrote Death and Dying, I heard her speak once, and she said, the only real anger lasts 5 seconds. The rest is sickness. I'll give me 10 seconds, but that's about, you know, double the amount, but it's true. We have to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. And Bill translates, in as Bill sees it, sudden brainstorm as sudden rage. So the grouch is a long-term building up and building up. Well, this happened, this could have happened, I should have done this, and they didn't do that, and I couldn't. It gets worse and worse and worse. The brainstorm is the sudden just lashing out. Were not for us. And here's, again, one of those wonderful big book phrases. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, dubious, the doubtful luxury of normal men. But for alcoholics, these things are poison. I have a friend who hates her ex-brother-in-law because of what happened, how he treated her sister, her late sister. And she's a normal person. And she has expressed to me the anger that she feels for him and wishes him well, badly, and hopes that he dies a horrible, lingering death, but doesn't think about him, doesn't bother her. She hopes that, but it's gone. That's her dubious luxury. But I know what he did, and I know that if I didn't do my step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 on that person, because I knew her sister, and I loved her very much, if I didn't handle my anger at him and get over it, I would start eating. So I have to work it because I can't afford that luxury as a compulsive eater, as an addict. For alcoholics, these things are poison. So there is now going to be a fourth column. It doesn't show on page 65, and so many people, including my first sponsor, thought that step 4 was just that fourth column, just those three columns. But there is a fourth. It's not illustrated. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, because we might discover that as we go through this, really, they didn't do any harm. It was my interpretation of what they did that was harmful. I've done a lot of mediations. I'm a trained mediator, and I can tell you, I've mediated disputes between people who really respected each other but thought that the other one didn't respect them because of the way they talked and the way they handled them, their inability to communicate well. So sometimes you feel the wrongdoing of others is fancied, sometimes you find it's real. But it's killing you, because if you have all those check marks, you are never going to remember not to eat the ice cream or not to take the offered thing. It's a fact. And this explains the pipeline blockage. All these things are blocking up that pipeline. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us, these are people in column 1 who have wronged you. Not everyone in column 1, not all the principals, but the people. The people whom you can't be in the same room with, the people who you think about and you want bad things to happen to. We realized that they were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms, that would be column 2, next to them, all the things that they did that bothers you. And the way these disturbed us, that would be column 3, self-esteem, ambitions, you know, security, whatever. They, like ourselves, were sick too. And here's the prayer. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. In a manuscript, it used to be a friend who has cancer. And the example that I want to give is there are many people in our lives who do and say hurtful things whom we absolutely don't get angry at. A person with Tourette's syndrome will say things, completely unable to stop from saying them, that can be hurtful and certainly shocking. People who have brain tumors can say things that can be shocking. When my wife and I were going to birthing classes, we were told about this moment of transition. There's 20 minutes in which your wife may very well say to you that you blames you for everything and wants to kill you. And that's just hormones and pain. You know? I'm going to give you the dirtiest joke I tell, and it's not dirty at all. I would say to my father a few times, thank you for being my father, and he says, it was a pleasure. My would not have been angry at my wife for doing that. There used to be this guy in my life, I would see him often in meetings. I didn't know him well, but I would see him, and he was grumpy and horrible and rude to people and just terrible. And I found out, and he always wore suits, even in the hottest weather. And I found out that he had been injured, he had been in a fire when he was 17, and that 90% of his body experienced burns, and he was constantly in pain. The reason he wore suits was to cover up all the scars. Well, I don't know about you, but if I were constantly in pain, I think I would be kind of grouchy. I think I would be trying to be nice, but it would be very hard for me to be nice. I wouldn't get angry at him. Well, aren't there some people who are so sick in their minds that they do things? And does not explain all of them, really? Like anyone who goes, who does things that are less than human or less than the best of what humanity can be, are people who are very sick. Sometimes for some people, that's not enough. For many people, this will be enough. You'll just say, God, help me show X the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend.
What do you do with Hitler?
I'm going to talk about that, yeah. There are all kinds of people for whom this doesn't work. Okay? But for many people, it does. You just look at them and you say, now remember, there's no forgiveness here. It's tolerance, pity, and patience. You would cheerfully grant it to a sick friend. You don't have to cheerfully grant it to this person. Okay?